the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, where we discuss all things crypto related. Your host, Kieran Ryan.
We are now nearly a year into the new crypto licensing regime. Some 220 crypto asset service provider licenses have been issued by the Financial Sector Conduct Authority over the last year. So it's a good time to check in with the FSCA and see what we've learned about the crypto sector and whether consumers are safer as a result of these new licenses. There certainly seems to be fewer crypto scams, but is that in fact the case? Consumers can now check to see if the latest crypto offering comes from a licensed service provider, and that, of course, is a good thing. So we asked Gerard van Deventer, head of enforcement at the FSCA, to join us for an update. Hi, Gerard. It's good to talk to you again. Can you give us an update on the number of licenses issued? And also, tell us a little bit about the license rejection rate. And I believe there was a fair number of applications that withdrew from the process. So give us a bit of an update on this.
Yes, sure. Thank you. Hi, Kieran. And it's a pleasure to be here. So on the licensing side, my colleagues at the licensing division at the FSCA has worked very hard over the past few months on this crypto licensing process. It's obviously a very popular license to have. So all in all, to date, FSCA has received 400 applications, and I'm happy to say that 225 of those licenses have been approved, and so far 8 licenses has been declined. So licenses are obviously declined if the applicant don't make the prerequisites, but it's also sometimes declined, and that's one of the checks that licensing division will do if an entity is under investigation or has been investigated before, or if there's a fit and proper issue. The number of applications that have been withdrawn is quite high. There's 106 withdrawals on the record. So this seems a bit odd. I think it warrants an explanation. It's really part of the process. So what happens here is that an applicant applies, and then they follows a conversation with the FSC licensing function. So licensing will point out to them that there's certain things that they need or that's required where they fall short. And sometimes as part of that discussion, there's a decision to withdraw and perhaps try again later. So it might seem a bit odd, but it's just because it's a two-way street with these applications.
Okay, now you've had nearly a year, I suppose, of monitoring the crypto industry because all the crypto asset service providers are providing you with monthly information about their activities. Have we learned anything so far about the industry in terms of its compliance and its general behavior?
I won't say that we've learned much in terms of their general behavior, but it is interesting to look at what type of business models we are seeing. So, what we see at enforcement is, interestingly enough, looks a lot at what my colleagues in licensing are also seeing. So, there's the arbitrage. Crypto applicants that deal only with arbitrage. There's the investment portfolios where crypto comprise one of the elements. Then there's the bundles of crypto assets weighted in terms of market cap. And then there's the straightforward payment gateways, crypto ATMs. Never thought I'll use that word in my lifetime. Off-ramps and on-ramps. And then custodial services. So that's what we're seeing in terms of the applications and the operations. And of course, it comes in all sizes. We've got applications from the major financial institutions and then from much smaller operators as well.
Yeah, it is interesting when you look through the list of the companies that have been awarded licenses. Some of the big institutions have been given licenses. Quite what they're going to do with it, I guess we're going to have to wait and see. But it's clear what you've just run through there. You've got arbitrage, you've got exchanges, you've got bundles where you can invest in a kind of a portfolio of cryptos and payment gateways and so on involving crypto. So there's a tremendous amount of innovation and product development in the crypto space. Are you at the FSCA adequately resourced to stay on top of all this and make sure that the crypto providers are remaining compliant? I imagine when you've got to monitor something like 225 licensees, that's a lot of resources that you've got to have.
Yes, Kieran, I don't know if anybody can ever be adequately resourced, but I think there's a balance between your resources and what you need to do with it. We are funded by levies on the industry, so we have to be sensitive to that. So we are divided into several functions or divisions, licensing being an important one. But post-licensing, as you pointed out, there needs to be supervision and monitoring. And that is the job of our conduct of business supervision team. And they are certainly geared up for this. But then, of course, the other important part of properly supervising, and that's always the issue. You can bring anything into the fold, but can you supervise and can you enforce? That's the big issue. So enforcement is, of course, our other big issue, and that is directly my responsibility. And if you ask me if I'm properly resourced, I can tell you that we work very, very hard to get through cases. But I did actually allocate a specific team for crypto because we did expect there to be an overhang in the market after D-Day for applications. So I've got a team that's dedicated to crypto investigations and specifically unregistered. So unregistered phase business with reference to crypto. And I've included in that team some external resources. That is one of our options, is to bring in external experts and investigators. And then I am also in the middle of recruiting an internal permanent crypto expert. So this would be somebody who would work with my teams internally, support them, and who would actually understand all this innovation. And hopefully all of that would there be a lot of skills transfer as far as that is concerned.
Let's talk about the scams. I know this is your favorite subject. We've spoken about it many times before. And it was one of the reasons that you introduced the licensing regime for crypto providers in the first place. How have these scams evolved and are they becoming easier to isolate and detect? I mean, you have mentioned in the past that anybody who wants to get involved in crypto or buy crypto, one of the things you can now do is you can go to the FSCA website and see whether that company is licensed. But the question is, are you finding it easier to detect these scams before they get out of hand?
Yeah, Kieran, you're absolutely right. This whole drive to supervise crypto and to declare it a financial product certainly started a couple of years ago with the whole issue of crypto being such a wonderful place to hide behind, because a couple of years ago, nobody understood crypto. It was a vague concept that you can claim that's what you're doing and it's difficult to check on it. And in any event, the most important issue is the FSCA don't have jurisdiction. So if you are running a scam and you claim it's a crypto scam and we can't investigate it, then who is going to investigate it? So it became imperative that that we bring it into the fold so that we can have jurisdiction and we can warn the public and we can investigate, etc. But I have to say, Kieran, that obviously didn't happen in isolation. That is where the whole world is moving. You probably know that we are members of an international organization, IOSCO, where the financial regulators of the world get together around the table and they discuss what's coming down the road. And our last meeting was in Germany a couple of months ago. And crypto regulation is certainly very high on the agenda. It's not a South African thing, I'm happy to say. So it is, we are moving with the rest of the world with this. So is it not easier? It is easier in this sense that scammers and fraudsters can't say, I refuse to speak to you, FSCA, because you don't have jurisdiction. And we are able to say to the public, do not do business with this so-called crypto provider because he is supposed to have a license and he doesn't have a license. So in that sense, it's certainly easier. You have to appreciate, though, that where we are today, technology is to the advantage of everybody, not just to the advantage of the good guys. So technology, crypto, platform trading on the internet, all of that creates fantastic opportunities for fraudsters. They can pop up, they can convince people to part with their money, and they can disappear. That makes things more difficult for us. It makes investigations difficult. So our relationship with foreign regulators is very important. If I have to isolate one move in scams and frauds, I certainly would say the most obvious one is that scammers and fraudsters has moved to social media. That is where they are now. You will find lots of opportunities on social media, and I'll say opportunities in inverted commas. And they often successful with that. Of course, they can reach thousands of people at a time. And interestingly enough, Telegram seem to be top on the list when it comes to fraudulent scams. I think it's time that we have a conversation with applications and platform providers and so forth to see what we can do about this. But yes, it makes it more difficult. But of course, we also use that same technology, so we can reach more people and warn them about scams and fraudulent activities. Firstly, by also using social media, and secondly, of course, by the grace of programs like this.
Okay, I was looking through the FSCA's latest annual report, and it's clear that many of the actions that you've enforced over the last year are designed to speed up South Africa's removal from the grey list that was imposed by the Financial Action Task Force. Now, it's not entirely the FSCA's responsibility, of course, but to the extent that it is, can you give us a quick update on the actions that you've taken to get South Africa removed from the grey list?
Yeah, very well. You're right. It's certainly not entirely our job. I think we play a lesser role in the whole thing. National Prosecuting Authority plays a massive role. And we're very supportive of whatever they want to do in terms of the requirements to get us off the grey list, because we all root for the same country. But we do have a role to play, there's no doubt. And I have no doubt about my commissioner's feeling about this. Whatever we can do, we must do. So there's two areas that we focus on when we talk grey listing, and the one is AML, anti-money laundering. So big effort there in terms of getting that going and showing that we can enforce that. And of course, the other area is crypto. So it's interesting. FATF is not just interested in us showing that we have the legislation to enforce crypto regulation and crypto licensing, etc. They also expect us to show that we can enforce that legislation. So in practical terms, what I'm saying with that is we already have the legislation. It's in place. As far as I'm concerned, it's good legislation. We have internal expertise, fintech, regtech, and so forth to help us to understand these things. But the next question is, so where's the enforcement? And that is why I mentioned earlier I have a dedicated team, because my contribution to this would be to get to a stage where I can show here are the sanctions, here are the investigations, and this is how we enforce this law. And as I say, hence a special team to deal with it.
Right, and of course, there's crypto is one means of these frauds being perpetrated, but it seems to be very much a hybrid kind of model that is sometimes involving normal fiat currencies, sometimes of cryptos, with on-ramps and off-ramps and all that kind of thing. Now, Can you tell us some of the bigger investigations you've been involved with? Last week, you provisionally withdrew Banxo's FSP license, financial services provider's license. Moneyweb's editor, Rek Vanico, blew that story wide open. Another one you're looking at is GS Partners, which has been found to be offering unrealistic returns, though it recently reached a settlement agreement with regulators in some parts of North America. What's occupying your energies at the moment? And I guess there is some criticism that the FSCA is taking too long to conclude investigations. You know, Mirror Trading International, you know, which was a stain on South Africa, that kind of went on a little bit too long in a lot of people's opinion. Can you just respond to that and tell us where your energies are going?
Sure. So I think the cases you mentioned, that's very much where our focus is at the moment, and some other cases involving crypto. We actually, on the crypto front itself, when I'm talking pure unregistered business crypto, I can give you some statistics and then get to your main question. Actively look for unregistered business in the crypto space. So we do that in a couple of ways. One thing that we do is we look at the FIC list of accountable institutions relating to crypto. So that means if you've applied there to be an accountable institution, then surely you should apply to the FSCA to have a crypto provider license. So we look at the discrepancy between those two lists. And that feeds our investigation list into the specialized team. We also do a fair amount of social media monitoring. And if we pick up interest in crypto advertisements there and offerings, then that will feed the investigation list as well. I have to say, I've not seen an overwhelming wave of unregistered business. I might just not see it. That's one possibility. And of course, as always, I encourage and request the public to let us know if they see something like this. The team has spent quite a bit of their time actually taking entities off the investigation list. So in other words, looking at an entity and say, well, clearly this entity has stopped doing business when D-Day arrived, or had this idea of doing the business and never got around to it, realized what it will take, and so forth. So we've taken off quite a number of cases already, which I think is good news. It's great that they ceased operations instead of actually contravening the law. So at the moment, we stuck with about 18 open investigations. This is investigations that, after some desktop investigation, often looking into the bank accounts, et cetera, we've said, let's do a full investigation. So there certainly is some of the resources. Banxo kept us very busy. That is something that we perceive to have the potential of harm for the public. So we certainly take it very seriously. And for us to do a provisional withdrawal of a license before we finalize an investigation is not a step we take often. But our first loyalty and responsibility lies with the public and good outcomes for them. So that's why we took that step. Talking about investigations taking long, that's fair. That is so. I have no doubt. We can talk for hours about why investigations take long, and you will be amazed at what holds up an investigation. Amongst other things, of course, it's frustration caused by the investigated party. We've got a fantastic legal system that allows for a lot of applications and interdicts and court fights that makes our life much more difficult. At the end, it comes back to you are going to be investigated and we are going to do the sanctions, but sometimes it's a long and hard road. But investigations take time because you have to do it properly. These are forensic investigations. They're not on-site reviews. They're not audits. So we have to corroborate everything. We have to give everybody the correct opportunity to reply and to make submissions and to get legal representation, etc. So we do realize that it takes long, notwithstanding, how hard we work. But you can't just leave it there, of course. So, Kieran, what we do in the enforcement division. If we see a harm, possible harm to the public or assets under threat in the beginning of an investigation, then we will take an alternative route, a bit of a sideshow, so to speak. So we will then look at, should we be warning the public? Should we be suspending the license? We also work very closely. We've built up this relationships over years. We work very closely with the FIC to freeze, for instance, bank accounts. And we get a lot of assistance from the banks and a lot of information from the banks to freeze bank accounts. And then in that freezing period of the bank account at 10 days, we then work with the asset forfeiture unit towards a preservation order to preserve funds stuck in bank accounts. We also did that in the bank's case. So we try to minimize that harm, knowing that investigations take long. If you look at the MTI case, interesting, you should mention that we took 6 months to finalize that investigation, and it was a massive investigation. And we had real experts external to assist with that. And that was years ago. And you're right, we got the doubtful honor of being of having had the biggest crypto Ponzi scheme in the world, and that was run by a South African who is now deceased. But just to give an idea, we finished in 6 months. We took our action. We're assisting the NPA with what they're doing. But today, still, the liquidators, and I know that because we had a consultation with some of the attorneys this morning, today, still, the liquidators are still busy trying to unravel that those permits and who gained and who lost and who should be sued and who should bring in and so forth. So these things, they just take very long. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, I can understand that. And of course, the legal system, you can game it, you know, quite successfully if you bring interlocutories and various delaying tactics. And of course, the people who benefited from these schemes seem to specialize in that. And they can certainly, in many cases, afford the very best legal advice that you can get. I wanted to just touch on one of the things that came out in the Bankso investigation that MoneyWeb did, AI and deepfake. I mean, some of these ads are so realistic. You know, Elon Musk appears to be standing up there and telling you, you know, this is the best investment that you could ever make, or Jan Rupert or whoever it is. You know, your eyes will deceive you. How do you stop that kind of thing from happening? Because these things can be created very quickly. They can be turned around, and in a week, they can make off with millions just on the basis of this. How do you stop that?
That's such a good question, and you cannot overstate how amazing that technology is. You know, I remember my younger days when I was still, I don't even think we can call it a gamer. I just had a computer, and your best graphics was some dot matrix image on the screen. If you see what's happening today, it is shocking. It is absolutely unbelievable. We've seen a lot of those videos. They are all convincing. It's the technology is out there for anybody to do that. And they really work. Sometimes we have difficulty convincing the complainants that this is not real. That's sometimes our first hurdle, because complainants insist that they heard Anton Rupert say that, or they heard Elon Musk say that. And there's so many semi-celebrities in South Africa that can be utilized for this. My latest one was a lady from, I think the program is called The Housewives of Pretoria or something like that. And it's so interesting how easy this is. So how do you stop that? Apart from taking substantial and material action when you can find these people, the other leg to stopping is, of course, education. So we spend a lot of time with public warnings. We spend a lot of time repeating the public warnings on any platform we can find. These public warnings always have the same core message, and that core message starts with unrealistic returns. If something is an unrealistic return, then, you know, that just tells you nobody's going to share that secret. He's going to keep it for himself. And then the other one I would certainly put up there, and this is also the message that I always put out there, is that if they claim that they don't need a license, they don't need a license to operate that. Because now with crypto having come into the fold, what on earth is left that you don't need a license for in the financial services industry? The only thing I can think of is private equity, and that's a very, very specific and defined area. So if somebody says, I don't need an FSCA license or a PA license, then that would be, have to be a massive red flag already. And of course, the other one is vague information, as vague as possible. That's the hallmark. So not only do I put out these messages all the time and public warnings every week, but my colleagues in consumer education at the FSCA, they do a lot of good work in reaching people, especially the lower end of the pyramid, to warn about scams, to do financial education, etc. But of course, you know, in a country where a lot of people's financial position are compromised and people are desperate, I don't know if we're ever going to win that fight.
Yeah. Okay. Final thought here, Gerard. What's the top of your wish list for the crypto industry? If we talk a year from now, what would you like to be able to report back?
I would love to report back, Gerard, that we have some solid licensed crypto providers out there, and that they are the kind of service providers who would make sure that their clients understand the very, very important issue of suitability, risk match. Because you can't ignore crypto. I know there are some countries that actually say, not in my country, but you can't ignore crypto. It's there. And there are people that can afford that type of high risk, because it's a high risk on top of a high risk, being a crypto high risk on top of a derivative geared instrument. What I would love to see is some solid crypto providers who knows that client must be warned that this is not for everybody. This is only for those people who can afford to lose the funds, and for those people who really understand the issues, not just the risk, but also, understand crypto and understand the markets. And then I would like to see for the rest to disappear. So yeah, no, definitely suitability and risk management is the big issue for me.
All right. Well, we're going to leave it there. Thanks very much for that wrap up there, Gerard, for updating us on what's been happening over the last year. It is fascinating to see the evolution and the growing sophistication, I guess, of the crypto industry. And it's heartwarming to see that there are some investigations going on, and that you're certainly doing your part to get us removed from the gray list. So thank you very much for joining us on the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast.
Thanks for listening to the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, hosted by Kieran Ryan. To listen to our other podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the MoneyWeb app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.